Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbisn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. I'm your regular Wednesday host, Kim Justice, and I play the generic intro, which, by the way, is penned by our founder, Craig. A song called Words. You can find it on Reverb Nation, for one, under the letter R, insane. All kinds of songs you can listen to for free from them. But I play that song when I have a co-host, and the second Wednesday of each month, I am grateful to have a wonderful co-host, Karen Robinson, who I will bring on in just a moment. And so I play a generic intro instead of my own personal one. Tonight, you might hear my bells out there. I've got a window open. It's been really cold around here from the moment we tore the page off saying it was officially spring. It was beautiful for the couple weeks before that, but the minute it turned spring, it got to be around freezing again and raining, which April showers bring May flowers. Some of the trees are flowering. I'll close that if it gets too loud, but just trying to get a little fresh air. Today was a beautiful day, and I was telling Karen earlier that I spent 7 hours on the computer. One thing I might give you guys a heads up about, if you haven't found out already, is we know that the cost of living has gone up, whether it's gas or food or being able to afford a home or whatever. But we got our renewal on our auto and homeowners insurance. And by the way, it is cheaper to bundle, put your homeowners and your auto with one company. They usually give you a cheaper rate than if you do each one at a different place. But we got our renewal, and it was close to triple what the usual cost is. And so, having been in related business, I know that banking and insurance companies do not reward being loyal and faithful customers. Every year, the rates go up. I don't think any of you have ever seen the rates go down. They always go up. So the longer you stay with the company, the higher the rates get, because they're just, you're going to get a rate increase every year. So I normally take this time and call around and get some comparative quotes. For that, you need to either find your policy, and the first page is called a deck page, and it outlines all of your benefits and gives you the cost you're paying now. And I would just give that price and not the renewal price if you call around. None of their business, really. And this is what you've been paying. But that way you can compare apples and apples when you call around to places to get comparative bids. Well, what I found out today, and just about every year I find less expensive coverage, I found the one that was $80 a year less, but that's like, I don't mean to minimize, it's something, but it's nothing compared to the difference I usually find. And it occurred to me, after getting a stiff neck and being a mole when it got to be 70-something today and the wind wasn't blowing like it is now and it was sunny and it would have been a beautiful day to be outside. I think Karen and I talked about this last month. I sat on the computer for 7 hours like a mole in my office, you know, trying to get to-do list some things knocked off of it, and of course got a headache from eye fatigue and got to step outside for about 10 minutes. Thought I didn't go anywhere, so I didn't really think I lost my phone, but because of this headache, I went in to lay down, and then I went to get my phone around dinner time, and it wasn't there, and I thought, what the hell? Whenever I take a nap or go to bed, I turn off my phone and plug it in so it's charged, and it wasn't there on the bathroom counter where I leave it. So I had to go and look around a little bit, and in that couple minutes that I was outside, I had it in a little pocket in my comfy pants, and it had slid out between the cushions on the couch outside on the deck. So thank God it wasn't raining, but my phone was almost dead, and it was just one of those days. But in any case, one thing you might prepare for and start saving a little bit out of each dime you get from wherever you get it, whether it's a job or Social Security or SSDI, whatever it might be, put every month if you own a home, because you might have noticed when we were going through this housing thing, all of our, not only did the interest rates go up, but the value of our houses went up a lot. Well, that's reflected in the insurance. So if you had a house, I'll just grab any old number. Say your house, you bought it and you insured it for $150,000, let's say. Now, after policy changes, interest rates going up, and the cost of housing going up so much, it being more of a seller than buyer market, that flip-flop, the value, your house might now be assessed, which you can find on your county assessor website, at maybe $250,000, $300,000. So when your insurance renews, it renews at the new value of your house, which you want, because if your house burnt to the ground and you lost everything, you would want the money that it would take to make yourself whole again and have your house rebuilt. But that particular thing, you know, we had been used to having a certain housing market for a long time with low rates, and houses were pretty affordable, and then everything flipped and changed. And so the last couple of years, I've been able to get better rates on the insurance. And this year, not. But it's also because the value being insured went up. And so just a little heads up, I guess, for you. But that's what I spent my day doing, and I wish I would have gotten out, because tomorrow's going to be chilly again and back to the 35, 40 mile an hour winds that we've been having. So in any case, that's one thing I thought I'd give you a heads up on. Karen and I are going to be discussing life and TBI on the show tonight. Callers are welcome. The number is 424-243-9540. And the topic is going to be varied a bit. In my program notes, I said goulash. Never be surprised by what comes up here. And that was because Karen and I, she's been really busy too. And we hadn't had a chance to talk, and so we didn't know, had a list of topics, but hadn't nailed one down. So tonight we're going to be talking a little bit in honor of the solar eclipse yesterday. I think it's 2044 the next time that will come up. Some of us probably won't be here for that one. Don't know when the last one was, but it was a big deal, not to me, the dogs and my husband and the bird. We all stayed in the house with the shades down. didn't buy the glasses and go out and look or exercise the new hot word totality. God, if I heard that one more time yesterday, I was going to scream. But NASA had a cool thing showing the different phases on the internet. I did look at that. But we thought we'd talk about polymorphic light eruption, a.k.a. sun poisoning 101, in honor of the eclipse yesterday, the solar eclipse, and the fact that it is officially spring and the sun's going to be out more. Assumedly, we're going to be outside more because it's going to be tolerable in this little window between winter and summer, as far as I'm concerned. The extremes. I'm sorry, I dropped my straw from my water on the floor. I don't mean to be making racket, but yuck. I got that, so I'll be sure to mute when I go in and find the sink to rinse this out. So we'll be talking about that, sun poisoning a little bit. And one thing I thought was cool about the solar eclipse is nobody was, when you looked like on television last night when I was watching the news and it was showing all over the world, really, as I flicked through the channels and flicked through YouTube a little bit, and people were together, crowded together with these funky glasses, watching the eclipse and getting interviewed by roving reporters. And there was nothing inflammatory. Nobody was any color. Nobody was any sexual persuasion. Nobody was any religious or political persuasion. People were just people. In this country, I guess we were Americans, together watching a phenomena that hasn't happened in a generation and won't happen again in another one, where we had quite a wide field of totality going across the United States. And I thought that that was super refreshing because a lot of us have almost forgot what that's like, for things to not be so divided and to be grateful that it was over something like that and not over a natural disaster or an act of terrorism or something that horrifies us all together, but something that brought joy to so many people, or a sense of awe to so many people, that they forgot all of the clutter the mind full of clutter, and didn't look like they were even thinking about any of the things that people are arguing about every day. So I thought that was probably the coolest part of the eclipse. But that's just me. I'll let Karen talk about that in just 1 minute. I do want to go back and make an announcement, because you guys had no way of knowing, but last Wednesday night, it started with my show, and Deborah Lee of, and I hope you will look up the website, America's Mighty Warriors.org. It's also the first show at the top. Well, this is the first show at the top, but the next one down on my webpage, inaflash.org, the show didn't go off because we weren't doing anything. Our provider, Blog Talk, here that had so much trouble around Christmas had quote-unquote technical difficulties, and it didn't allow the show to go on. It hung up on you callers. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. We're having technical difficulties. Goodbye. Click. That was for you callers. For us hosts on the inside, we weren't showing up, nor were you on the switchboard, and we had a dead studio. And it's a frustrating, really pisses you off, really makes you sad when you've worked really hard to put a show together and to promote it in about 30 places on social media. And in the case of my show, it was a time-sensitive show because of a fundraising event to help veterans that was going on this past Saturday. And so Deb was going to be on Wednesday night. Her son, Mark Lee, was the first Navy SEAL from Charlie Platoon, SEAL Team 3, who was killed in Iraq. And he was with Chris Kyle, who a lot of you know from the movie, The American Sniper. And so I was very much looking forward to having her. Deb was a guest years ago. In fact, I believe it was 2014 when Deb was my guest. And a lot has changed with her since that interview, where her son just died a few years before, and all of the work she's done with her nonprofit since then. And other things haven't changed. Mark is still gone, but they're doing an awful lot of important, valuable work for veterans. And so that show didn't fire. The Thursday night host, Terry, that show did not fire. And Friday night, Continue Mission with Captain James McCormick did not fly. And so on the weekend, I had unhappy hosts. I was one of them. Nothing I could do about it but write a poison pen letter to Blog Talk Radio, and we did some looking around at some other possible venues. And I will tell you that we have had presences in other venues. We record and host the show on Blog Talk Radio, but we are other places. We added a new venue, Spotify. I think you'll find about 300 of our episodes on Spotify. And one we're looking at possibly moving to, that has a number of our shows on it, is called Podbean. Weird name, podbean.com. We're not going anywhere right now. Got a very busy month going on. We're going to proceed as we have been doing. We're not going to do anything fast and abrupt. We don't want to confuse our hosts or our listeners about where we are. But if you tried to call in last week, apologies, just like over the holidays, when you tried, and we appreciate it because of the tech difficulties Blog Talk was having and the last few days. Anyway, I'm glad we're back on the air and the ship has been righted for now, and we are on top of giving ourselves even a wider presence than we've had. In fact, an article just came out, and I'll look for it later when Karen's talking and post it on Brain Injury Radio or tell you where it is, but a really nice article. We're number one of the 35 surveyed brain-related podcasts that are out there. And it was a nice article and nice to see us up there at number one. And that's been for a few years, but this happened to be to watch, I guess, for 2023 and to watch going into 2024. So in any case, wanted to explain that to you because a lot of people probably don't know what was going on. And then finally, for those of you who might be new around here, Recovery Now, each of us has a little blurb. We have a lot of hosts on Brain Injury Radio, and some have written down a blurb and some have not. But generally speaking, this show is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a We Recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your regular Wednesday host, Kim Justice. If you want to know more about me, you can check out my website, inaflash.org. And my wonderful co-host, Karen Robinson, I will bring her on now, and then I hope to play a song of one of our newfound indie musicians. But Karen Robinson, wonderful blogger, life coach, and co-host, and lots of other things, check out her website at hopetbi.com. Again, that's hopetbi.com. With that, I'm going to open up the chat room and bring in Karen. How are you? Did you get all that?
I am excellent. I did. I'm doing excellent tonight, feeling gunning and raring and ready to go, and really excited about our topic tonight. We kind of have a combined topic regarding photophobia and also the polymorphic light eruption that we're going to be going into tonight and taking a deep dive down. And interesting information about how they could possibly correlate.
Yeah, I thought they did. From when you suggested it, I went and read some, and okay, I'll be interested because I thought, of course, poly implies more than one thing, but it looked to me like it was sun poisoning, but I think it's a really good topic in that we are going into spring. I complained about not being out on the beautiful day today, but there's only going to be more of those now that we're officially into spring. And a lot of times people don't think about it. They're so relieved just to be able to go outside in a light jacket or no jacket. You know, there's always those that get out in their shorts a little early as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, out in their shorts and flip-flops and baring skin, and a lot of, you know, sunscreen or what the sun can do. So I think this is going to be a good reminder. Have you ever been to South Carolina?
I was actually born in South Carolina.
You were?
Oh, yes, I have. I was.
Oh, my God. What part?
In Greenville.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding at all.
That's
and my
so
parents
funny.
Actually met each other in South Carolina.
Oh, my goodness. Do you happen to know where it's a little bit over from there, but same part of the state, I think. Have you ever heard of Pickens County? It's northwest.
I have not. I did not grow up in South Carolina. I was born there and had my toddler years there, but I did not grow up there. But I am familiar with the area and familiar with my parents met in Bible college there at Bob Jones University. And so I'm very familiar with their history with the area.
How interesting. Well, if you don't mind, you know, one of the things I like to do on here, and this is going to be a future topic for us, and this probably isn't going to be one of the songs we'll be playing that night. But you were going to be talking about in the future, and we've talked a little bit about it in the past, but we always come at it at a different angle. The kind of music that's the most healing. Well, I had a little something different happen. I was doing my genealogy, and my very first patriot that I found, which means somebody in my direct genealogy, my direct line who fought in the American Revolution, then Robert Pickens, his brother, was General Robert Pickens, who fought with George Washington at the Potomac. Trying to think of the name of the big battle, but drawing a blank at the moment. But it was kind of weird. They've got a county named after him, Pickens County, where they lived, and their graveyard, like a lot of places in the old days, the graveyard was in the back of the estate, in the backyard, basically, the family plots. And I was flipping through, listening to music that I like, regular music on YouTube the other night, and out of nowhere, a song called Pickens County. And I was like, no way. Who's ever heard of Pickens County? And here I am in Nebraska, okay? I've never been to South Carolina. But I was shocked to see Pickens County, and so I played it. And I've said before on here that things in my personal playlist are not necessarily on my show playlist. And that's true with this band, too. They're really nice. Greg Payne is the lead singer and the one who gave out the rights for me to play the song. Very nice guy. The rest of the guys seem to be nice, but it's redneck country where they're at. So a lot of girls and a lot of booze and a lot of partying and cowboy hats. No, trucker hats, excuse me, and and boots. And so some guys who really like to have a good time out there, but I talked to him and I asked him if I could have permission to play a song, because it's a good one to play at the beginning of a show, because it's called Come On Out Tonight. But I will go ahead and plug their band, Nice Guys. If you like country-ish kind of music and you like that rodeo driving partying kind of music, then you might want to check out the Piedmont Boys. Piedmont, by the way, is a county on the other side of her Greenville. So you got Pickens County, Greenville County, and then Piedmont County, spanning across the north of South Carolina. They're called the PiedmontBoys.com is where you can find them. You can find them on YouTube, where they have a lot of sordid videos. But this one is just kind of a fun video and a fun song. I'll play this, and then we'll come back and get back to our topic. This is Come On Out Tonight, and I hope you will join us. We got a chance to make it right. that was the Piedmont Boys. So I hope you guys will all come out tonight and check them out on YouTube. They have 5 or 6 different albums, and I appreciate them letting us use some. I guess there was just one more piece of housekeeping. Next month, Karen and I are going to be doing our show on the 3rd Wednesday of the month, and I'll have notes on that next month. So anyway, Karen, why don't you launch our topic for the night, if you would.
Yeah, I sure will. And, you know, I wanted to add on real quick to, we were talking about directions earlier, like South Carolina, the South, and just different parts of the region and the world that you and I have been to or throughout the United States that we visited. But when I refer to myself and my history with experience to the different cultural influences I've encountered throughout my life, I say I have a Southern flavor to my personality in relationship to music and food, with a Western open heart and an Eastern soul where I really vibe, and I'm adorned with a Midwestern cloak of many colors.
Oh, my goodness. So, that covers it.
It does. You know, I just have, like, all these places that I hail from, and really it just comes from my vast array and kaleidoscope of opportunities I've had to meet different people in different states and different communities, and it just continues to grow.
Yeah,
but
that's
that being
what I thought.
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Well, I was just going to say, in relation to that, that's why I thought it was cool when I reach out to these musicians. And I understand how hard it is from our founder, first of all, and from being an author, because it's the same thing, you know, that it's hard to promote what you're doing, you know, and be able to make a living at music as an indie if you're not underwritten by a big label. And I won't go into all the reasons why people want to stay away from a big label and do it this way, but I'm happy to help artists launch. But when I reach out to them, you know, a lot of times they think that I'm a crazed fan or a stalker, and sometimes it's hard to talk to them because they wonder about my motive when I say that I'm wanting to promote them for free, you know, to all 50
mm-hmm.
states and 49 countries live to archive. And if they'll give me permission to play, you know, some of their music or a song or two, I'm not making anything off of it. We're not making anything off of it. We're not selling it as a network. We're just promoting it. Then things are usually okay. So I do appreciate Greg. He didn't immediately get back to me. And I said to Craig, our founder, I said, so what do you think if just a strange gal reaches out? Because Craig's a nice-looking guy, and this Greg is a nice-looking guy. I'll just say that out front. I said, what do you think when a gal reaches out and if she wanted to play your music? He said, I run like hell. And I started laughing, and I thought, yeah, I bet both of these guys get a lot of calls from people who are crazed fans. But that wasn't the case. You know, I saw them. They looked like they were having a good time. Some of their stuff's a little rough. I play a lot of healing kind of music on my show playlist for the most part, and they're having a little too much fun in some of the songs that I did put in my own personal playlist, but that I won't be playing on here. But they had a very talented fiddle player and guitarist. Greg is a great guitarist, and they seem like they're having good fun, and so yeah, it is cool to get the opportunity to talk to people after you convince them that you're not a stalker particularly. So
you can never go wrong with some good fiddle playing and some good guitar music, that's for sure.
Exactly. Okay, now you can go ahead and proceed. I just wanted to thank them because I will write him and tell him that we played them tonight, so in case he was wondering, he hasn't heard back from me since I got the okay from him. I will write him back, thank him, and tell him to listen to tonight's show, and this is actually the second show that I've played some of their music on, so truly not a stalker, just a radio host, predominantly a talk show that sprinkles in and tries to support independent artists. And then we talk about
things. And I really love that about you.
Well, I hope they do. I'm grateful.
Well, you know what they say, there's no such thing as too much publicity, good or bad. So either way, they're getting their name put out there, right?
That's what I thought. You know, and I have about 50 artists of a lot of different kinds of genres. And, you know, it was really that Pickens County thing that, oh, I think there's somebody on the phone. 803 is a South Carolina area code. But anyway, if you know 803 where Pickens County, Greenville, or Piedmont County is, I just got done playing a band from your neck of the woods, and they know how to party and have a good time. Hang on just one moment. We have a caller.
Wrangle them up.
803.
I've been to Greenville several times, Kim. It's Les Paul.
I know it is. Hello,
the,
Les Paul.
The long and lost UFO guy.
Yes.
I'm joking.
This is my co-host, Karen, Les Paul. You guys have never met, I don't think.
Hello, Karen. Never met you. How are you doing?
I am finer than a frog hair, which is pretty fine since they don't have any.
Oh, my goodness. My mother taught me that a million years ago. She always said finer than a frog hair. I said, what, Mom?
Oh, see, that's the Southern coming out of me now.
Me too. Hey, y'all. I'm Les Paul. Sorry. I had to get silly.
Well, that
Kim,
is
Kim, I've
so
been trying
cool.
to get back
to
just to talk to you, and I haven't.
So what brings you on to the mic tonight, Les Paul?
Well, when I saw it was Kim's show tonight, and then I saw she had you with her, and I said, you know what, I need to get on there and say hello to everybody. Kim knows me pretty well, but I don't believe she's met me. Has she, Kim? I don't think.
No. Karen's been my co-host on the second Wednesday of each month for several years now, and Karen Les Paul was a weekly host for many, many years and then went to two Tuesdays a month. And now he hasn't been on for a while, but he's got a job at an independent living center and seems to be, he's one of us, a brain injury survivor and longtime host on Brain Injury Radio.
If you only knew what happened, you'd know why I was gone for so long. I said, you know what, I've got to crash for a while, let it happen. And then come back someday if possible.
Yes.
So I just decided,
you
got to
kind of go with the flow, right, Les Paul?
Yeah. Well, you ladies sound fine on here tonight, what you're talking about and everything. But I was involved with the Brain Injury Association of South Carolina for a long time. I've been to Greenville several times with the Brain Injury Association of South Carolina. And I know a lot of indie artists in Greenville.
Well, if you go again, look for the Piedmont Boys. The lead singer is named Greg Payne, and it looks to me like they play in a lot of bars in that neck of the woods. So if you get a chance to check out the Piedmont Boys, tell them you heard them on Brain Injury Radio, on Kim's show on Brain Injury Radio. And I'm sure you'll have a good time listening to them. But I look forward to talking to you off air and finding out if and when you can come back and host again. But it's so nice to hear your voice.
Okay, well, I don't want to interrupt the show, but I've finally resolved a lot of things. I had my roof destroyed on my home. We had a microburst that literally blew my roof off my house.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's when I said, you know what, I'm stepping down for a while. I've got to do this. And next thing you know, 2 months have passed, maybe three.
During that hurricane, is that?
We had a bad storm, and it hit. And I felt my home shake, and I heard things being torn off the roof, and it ripped, then hailed like crazy. And they said it came right over my home when they did it with the radar and everything. They said, well, it's directly over where you live. It almost hit your home exclusively. It literally.
Well, what a blessing that you're still alive, and hopefully nobody was hurt.
Man, it just hurt my feelings and cost a lot of money.
Yeah,
I heard your wallet, for sure.
I'll let you guys get back at it, but it's great listening to your show and everything tonight. It's real good.
Well, thank you, Les. And your first Tuesday of the month, I haven't changed the password. The first Tuesday is still open. So if you want to do that, you're welcome back. Anytime. I didn't shut you out. I just knew you were on a leave of absence. So the door's still open.
Okay. I'll come back then because I'm finally have this over and behind me now. It took me months to get it over with and many thousands of dollars.
And see,
well,
your legacy lives on, Les.
Yeah.
Yeah. The older the roof is, the less they pay for it. So it's hard to get a whole new roof if it happened to be older when it blew off.
Mm-hmm.
So I know how tough that can be. Well, I'm sorry that happened, but I'm really happy to hear your voice. So we'll talk really soon.
Okay. You guys have a great one. Nice talking to you.
Hey,
you
too, Les. Delight to meet you and bless your heart for being on here tonight.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks
nice
for calling, Les.
You're welcome.
Glad to know.
Thank you, guys.
All right. And hi to Megster. Good night.
All right.
Hey, Kim.
She's listening.
Hi, Megster. Okay. All right, Karen.
We're willing to take more calls. We got. We want to take more calls and answer any questions and hear your stories at 424-243-9540. Again, that's 424-243-9540. You can also log in to the Brain Injury Radio website and catch us in a live chat in our radio room as well.
That's true. Few people know of that. And we go back to 2009, and I started, Craig did it once a week for 2 years, 9, 10, 11, which puts us somewhere in 2011. And Les and I, we started out as 7 weekly hosts. Craig was a weekly host. I've always been Wednesday night weekly host. Les was the original Tuesday weekly host. So he goes back to the beginning. It's just, you know, people's lives, they get jobs, you know, their buckets get more full, you know, things like you've done, you know, and I'm fortunate to still get you here once a month, but, you know, deciding to go to school and all the things that you've been accomplishing and emergencies in the family, you know, I played tapes for about a month, month and a half of the thousands of old shows I have because of, you know, my dad dying and family stuff going on, and I haven't done that the whole time that I've been here. So we all go through things that change our schedules, but anyway, the door is always open for you for less, and that's good. So, okay, tell us about morphing, polymorphing, light eruptions.
Well, you know, I'm going to get to that, Kim. I really am, and that's where we're headed. However, I do want to start with a little bit about photophobia and photosensitivity. Now, to reference those things, a lot of people may just think of it as all the same thing. You know, it's all related to light or the sun, and there's really no difference. But there is a slight difference, and in some ways major differences, and I think it's really important to be able to kind of define what those differences are. To a person who is sensitive to light, there really is no difference, ultimately, because photophobia and photosensitivity both mean that a person perceives light as brighter than it is, or they have a sensitivity to light that may or may not cause pain. Now, if we were to put that in common language, we could say that light sensitivity is a common symptom of TBI and concussion when we're referring to talking about it being related to brain injury. And, you know, since this is Brain Injury Radio, we do like to try and weave that into our topics a little bit and how they correlate. And since light sensitivity is a common symptom of TBI and concussion, it's thought to be a result of the brain's inability to adjust to various levels of brightness after an injury. Now, not everyone who has a concussion or has a brain injury will experience or develop light sensitivity, but a lot of us do. I know I did. I still do at times. Kim, I know you've had those challenges as well. It's usually linked right in with some of those post-concussion headaches and, you know, whether you have them short-term, long-term, or chronically throughout your life, usually they're coupled with that light sensitivity. Now, light sensitivity can be an immediate symptom of TBI or ABI, acquired brain injury, and it can also linger as part of what I referred to earlier as post-concussion syndrome. Now, we're not going to get into all those details about post-concussion syndrome and those types of things because we're focused on a little bit of a different track tonight. But photophobia is considered one of the most commonly encountered symptoms of concussion and post-concussion syndrome. And there is a suggestion that approximately 43% of individuals experience some form of photophobia even after a mild head trauma. Now, when we're saying mild, that doesn't necessarily infer the degree of intensity of the injury. That just refers to a breakdown of whether they lost consciousness, their GCS scores, and a whole bunch of other things that help scale whether it's mild, moderate, or severe. And again, we're not going into all those tonight either. But that's when I say mild head trauma, I'm not referring to the intensity of the brain injury, but just what it's referenced as on that scale. But the majority of patients rate their sensitivity as severe when they do experience it. So whether they've had a mild or a moderate or a severe brain injury or brain trauma, the photophobia they have or that light sensitivity is they would often describe as a severe experience. And other common symptoms of TBI and concussion, like relating to light sensitivity, may include something called asthenopia, squinting, and those headaches we referenced earlier. Now, photophobia is the most severe, and it can last 1 to 3 years after a head trauma, and it can even be lifelong for some people. And it's regarded to be among the most challenging neuro-ophthalmological disorders to be able to manage, since there are no really large randomized controlled trials to guide that management. That's why it's really imperative and even optimal to be able to work with a neuro-optometrist after experiencing a concussion or head injury just to be able to address some of those things at the neural level that is happening as related to the brain as opposed to your visual field itself. Injuries to the central nervous systems, microglia, results in the inflammatory release of toxic or degradative substances that harm normal cells. Now, I know that we're going to be covering topics over the next few months, Kim, about inflammation and a lot of topics related to inflammation and how that really affects our body, especially after having a head injury. But interestingly enough, that photophobia and that sensitivity to light is affected greatly by that central nervous system disruption and that release of those substances that harm our cells. Furthermore, in regards to all of that, that disruption of the blood-brain barrier can amplify all those effects, which is completely fascinating from a scientific standpoint. From a person actually going through it, it's a pain in the ass because it's just annoying. You have all these symptoms. You have headaches. You have a need to be curled up in darkness, and you know, just it's a big struggle on top of everything else you're going through. Now, photophobia is strongly affected by the wavelength of light, for those that like to know a little bit more of the technical side. And it's demonstrated that patients with migraines were more annoyed by shorter wavelengths, or what you may have heard referred to as blue light, than by longer wavelengths, or what you may have heard referred to as red light, in comparison to those that have tension headaches or other types of controls along with those types of, different types of headaches. And another study revealed that when the wavelength of the light stimulus was changed, it visually evoked beta brain activity and demonstrated a significant difference in cortical activity. So you could actually see the changes going on within the brain based on the light exposure. And the results indicated that blue light enhanced and red light suppressed migraine symptoms in patients, which is where when we talk about being able to deal with headaches on an intimate basis, there are certain colored glasses you can wear or lights that you're exposed to that can help reduce some of those symptoms or that aura exposure when you have a migraine or headache coming on. Now, you'll hear a lot of that also referred to as what kind of light bulbs you use and what kind of light emission is given by those light bulbs. The most common thing we've heard in the news and throughout the media over the last several years is in regards to the UV radiation that's emitted from fluorescent lights. And halogen lamps emit significant levels of ultraviolet radiation and should definitely be covered with glass prior to use. Incandescent bulbs emit low-dose ultraviolet radiation. And researchers at Stony Brook University, they found that energy-efficient bulbs even emit high levels of harmful ultraviolet radiation. Now, that means exposure to the bulbs could lead to that thing we none of us want to have, and that's premature aging of our skin, and even increase our risk of developing cancer, like we need anything else on top of all the other crap we're dealing with, right?
Right.
So
is that LED?
Nope, not LED. And I'm headed that direction. Your great mind.
Okay,
all right. It's a little bit different than LED. Fluorescent lights are the ones they're trying to get rid of and replace.
Oh, no, I know fluorescent.
LED lights
I was...
replaced.
Okay, good.
But it can cause
the fluorescence
skin cancer
I know in the
form.
Grocery.
Yeah, exactly. But if people are getting exposed to that type of light, and it's not just the light bulbs, you know, you can get that same emission of that similar radiation from the sun, which is where we're headed down this little rabbit hole path we're going. But it can cause skin cancer in the deadliest form called melanoma, which is what we hear when we hear doctors talk about put on sunscreen so you don't get melanoma, so you're protected from the UV rays from the sun or the ultraviolet light from the sun. And dermatologist Rebecca Tung describes it as the deadliest form of UV exposure. And, you know, they randomly tested these bulbs and they found that the rays were so strong that they could actually burn your skin on the cellular level. So not just on the outside, but deep. And the results were that you could actually initiate cell death. And that's according to Marcia Simon. She's a professor of dermatology at Stony Brook. Now, fluorescent bulbs and incandescent bulbs are different than LED bulbs that they're encouraging us to use now. And that's what you were just asking about earlier, Kim. Compared to fluorescent bulbs, LED lights are up to 80% more efficient. Now, unlike fluorescent lights, LED lights, and this is for my technical folks out there, LED lights convert 95% of their energy into light, and only 5% is wasted as heat. Now, this is all while still using far less power to provide a really strong and consistent output at a lower wattage. And although most types of LED lighting do not emit any UV light, brilliant blues do emit a small amount, and there are LED manufacturers that do incorporate some UV light materials with their bulbs, but they also have to put that on their boxes. So you can read the boxes and see whether or not that's included as part of the bulbs or not. Personally, I get the LED lighting without the UV light option, because I really don't want the additional UV light exposure for lots of reasons. But if you're looking for that option, it is out there. The phosphor reduces the emission of UV light in the LEDs to such a small fraction of the already small amount that the amount emitted is really essentially negligible. So you're going to get better health results based on the studies presented from LED lights as opposed to those fluorescent and incandescent bulbs. And you're going to reduce and, if not totally eliminate or mostly eliminate, your UV exposure from those bulbs, which, by the way, you cannot be protected from even with a lampshade from those fluorescent and incandescent bulbs, which I thought was really interesting. Because, you know, I thought, well, if you have a lampshade, you've got this barrier between you and the bulb, so you should be all good. Not accurate. That is false, fake news for a little humor there on the news part. But ultraviolet electromagnetic radiation is a form of non-ionizing radiation that is emitted by the sun and other artificial sources. Now, when we think of artificial sources of light, we need to consider things like tanning beds or arc welding. And while it has some benefits for people as far as the UV part, including the creation of vitamin D, because you hear all the time, oh, you need to go out and get in the sun so you can get some vitamin D. And, you know, it's so much more healthier for you to have some sun exposure. And it is important to have that creation of vitamin D. But too much can also cause health risks. And the photosensitivity disorders that occur in both individuals with lightly pigmented and heavily pigmented skin happens all the time. Now, in a United States study of about 1,080 patients with photodermatosis, that's different types of photosensitivity diseases or disease processes, polymorphous light eruption, which is what we're going to be covering a little bit more tonight, also known as PMLE. You guys can look that up if you want to learn a little bit more about that. But it's P as in Paul, M as in Mary, L as in Lincoln, E as in Edward. So polymorphous light eruption. was more common in black people, and photoallergy and phototoxicity, phytophotodermatitis, porphyria, and solar urticaria were diagnosed more commonly in Caucasian individuals. Now, what does this say? It says that we can all, regardless of our ethnicity or regardless of our race, can be affected by photosensitivity, and that there are specific types of photosensitivity that are more common based on our culture, which I also found to be really intriguing. And that tonight, what we're going to be discussing and kind of diving into a bit is the polymorphic light eruption that is the most common form of immunological mediated photosensitivity dermatosis. So just to break that down in, you know, common speak, is light that affects your immune system and may be caused from disruption in your immune system. Now, you can get disruption in your immune system from a head injury. You can get disruption in your immune system from poor nutrition and multiple pages of lots of other things. So, but what we're going to be focusing on just for this evening is one aspect of that, and that's the polymorphic light eruption. And that's the most common light-induced skin disease. Now, polymorphous, poly meaning many, it means it looks different in different people. Eruption refers to the sudden onset of the rash. And it usually happens within 30 minutes of UV light exposure. Someone goes out in the sun, whether they have on thin, long-sleeve clothing or their skin is bared, they will develop these bumps on their skin, usually within 30 minutes to 2 hours after they've been out in the sun. And the condition is also known as polymorphic light eruption. Some people may have heard of it referred to as a sun allergy or even sun poisoning. Now, people with polymorphic light eruption are at a greater risk of vitamin D deficiency, as a certain amount of sun exposure, again, like we mentioned earlier, is needed to make your own vitamin D. Now, before people start freaking out, thinking, oh, I get that rash when I'm out in the sun, I get these hives on my arm, and I start itching, and I start, you know, experiencing all these symptoms. If you have this familiarity with it, don't panic. It's actually quite a common form of immunological mediated sensitivity. It's a benign, non-cancerous condition, and it's different than melanoma. So it's not, they're two different animals. While the rash does not increase your risk of skin cancer, exposure to UV light does. So the sun protective measures that you take to prevent the polymorphous light eruption also lowers your risk of cancer from the UV rays. Polymorphic light eruption can very easily be misdiagnosed or mistaken for, now I'm sure all of you will have heard of this, heat rash or prickly heat. Now, prickly heat or heat rash is caused essentially by what? Warm weather, overheating, getting too hot, getting too sweaty, too sticky, you know, rather than sunlight or UV light. It's related to just being too warm. The skin is in prickly heat. It does not harden or desensitize as it can do when someone is experiencing polymorphic light eruption. And polymorphic light eruption is thought to affect 10 to 15% of the population and up to 40% of the population in some areas. So it depends on, you know, how often you're out in the sun, what kind of sun exposure you have. And it's thought to be caused by UV light, a UV light altering substance in the skin. which the immune system, again, reacts to, resulting in the skin becoming inflamed. And there's those inflammation markers. So if someone's having a flare of polymorphic light eruption, you might see an increase in inflammation markers in their blood labs. And so, you know, that all ties in together. And you'll be hearing Kim and I going over some more things about inflammation as over the next few months. So you'll definitely want to stay tuned in for those shows as well. But this polymorphic light eruption, it's not passed down through families. But about 1 in 5 people with the condition do have an affected relative, as it's a really fairly common condition, as we mentioned earlier. Now, it's not infectious. It can look rough. It can look rough on somebody. It may look like they have hive breakout, like they're having an allergic reaction to something, because they are. Their immune system is reacting to the sun and that UV light. But it's not infectious. You can't catch anything from someone. There's no risk of catching polymorphic light eruptions from another person. The individual patients tend to develop the same type pattern of outbreak each year, and what they call lesions usually heal without scarring. Now, I was diagnosed with polymorphic light sensitivity several years ago. I didn't know what was going on. I would be driving or going out in the sun, walking, you know, just sitting out in the sun, and gosh, I've laid out in the sun for years without any issue. I've always been out in nature, just love the sun. I mean, shoot, when I was, and this is going way back, but when I was a teenager and in my early 20s, I used to take peanut oil or some kind of nice coconut oil, rub it on my body, and go lay in the sun to get a nice tan. You know, I don't do that anymore because, you know, I've wisened up to exposing myself to that degree, because essentially I was cooking myself. But, you know, one of the things that I developed.
Whole generation
after,
of us.
Right? For real. One thing,
lemon juice and the hair.
Get those shiny highlights.
Baby oil and all of that. Yeah, that generation is gone. Seems like a lot of the kids are smarter these days. They don't like lay out for hours like we did, but they don't necessarily use sunscreen and know that just walking around or the sun coming through your car window or, like you said, just being out wherever, the park, playing frisbee or doing whatever, that you're still getting exposure to the sun, not like our whole generation did on purpose. And a lot of them are still going to tan beds, but I think browning, tanning lotion is getting a little more popular with them. So hopefully, you know, social media is killing them, but not the sun is bad for this later generation. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, like with the tanning beds you're referencing, some of the tanning beds even can, for some people, not for everybody, it can cause a change in their skin pigmentation and their skin texture to where their skin actually develops like a leathery or lizard-like texture to it, usually on around their neck and shoulders, and you know, in the areas where there's creases, that some people experience that effect from those. So, you know, I don't know if that's directly related to the exposure to the UV light or what causes that, but that is that can be kind of foreboding for wanting to go and partake in those in that form of self-care. You know, some people like to really be tan, and that's not necessarily something that I personally would be down for regarding my skin. So everybody has their own interests, but that is a unique thing that is developed from tanning beds that they've done studies on. But going back to the rash that appears, there are a number of clinical types of the polymorphic eruptions. There's a papular type, and that is the most common form. Now, when you see small papules, And papule basically just means a bump. When there's small papules or small bumps all over, they almost look like small mosquito bites or hives, that kind of size. They may develop in one area like the chest, the arms, the neck, or all over the body, or as densely clumped together. And that plaque type, and the plaque type is the second most common pattern. Now, the first type, remember, the papules or the bumps. The second type is the plaque type. Now, plaques may be superficial or urticarial, so the hives I was talking about. It occurs primarily on the arms, lower limbs like the legs or the shins, or wherever your skin is exposed to sun or to the UV lights, and the V area of your chest. You know, usually that area that goes from the whole upper neck and down into the V area, down to your sternum. Sometimes people wear those V neck T-shirts or bathing suits, and that's where you get that V-neck shape from. And it usually begins with raised plaques or those bumps where groups of those vesicles may rise. And this is what really attacks the immune system, or the immune system attacks it, and it creates this itching, which can come across as a really insane itching or a deep itching, that even itching it or rubbing it or shaking it doesn't relieve that kind of itching feeling. So that's the effects that the person is feeling from that UV radiation. And ultraviolet radiation, or UV, when we say UV, we mean ultraviolet. It's a wavelength of sunlight in a range that's really too short for the human eye to see, but it reaches, what UV light that reaches the earth is divided into two wavelength bands, ultraviolet A, which is UVA, and ultraviolet B, which is UVB. Now, a person with photosensitivity, they can react to both types of UV radiation. Ultraviolet B, which again is the UVB, it does not penetrate glass. But ultraviolet A, UVA, does. And exposure to sunlight through windows or even sunscreen-protected skin may cause a reaction in some people with that photosensitivity. Now, an episode is most likely to occur after the first one or two times of sun exposure after a period of no exposure. So, for example, you've gone all winter, you've been holed up in the house, or you know, been inside working, and now that it's getting sunny out and the spring weather is happening and you want to be outside because it's so glorious and beautiful, why wouldn't you want to be? That is when people see the most breakouts, such as in spring or early summer. Episodes are less likely to happen as the summer progresses. After the first episode, it's often likely that the episodes will reduce as the summer continues because they're getting more exposed to it and they're getting more acclimated to the sensitivity to that light again. However, there are some people that no matter how much sun they have, whether it's a little bit or a lot, they're going to break out. They're going to have that flare. And it happens every year for them. Now, some people become gradually less sensitive over several years and eventually no longer even experience that yearly rash. And other people just have it like clockwork. And it's really got researchers frustrated because they haven't really been able to pinpoint an exact cause of these things. They can find correlations with certain events or certain things happening with the body. The most common denominator is the immune system being affected in some way. But the face is not always affected. It usually sticks to the head, neck, chest, and arms. I'm not saying that the face can't be affected, but it's a lot less common for that to happen that way. Now, it can look different from person to person. Typically, there's the inflammation, the itching, the small bumps. However, some people may not even have that. Their skin may just get red, and they may experience fever and chills. kind of like they're having flu-like symptoms, but they're not sick. They don't have the flu. So in polymorphous light eruption, eruption refers, again, to that rash, which usually appears 30 minutes to several hours after exposure. It usually appears on the areas of the body that were covered during winter but exposed in summer, such as upper chest, front, neck, and arms. And exposure to the sun in spring or summer results in that rash that, for most people, does resolve within about 10 to 14 days. But not for everybody. Some people, again, have it chronically, and it lasts. And the more time they're in the sun, the worse the breakout becomes. So symptoms of the rash can be treated. There are some things that a person can do to reduce some of the effects around that. It's really important to be able to, there are different ways that that can be diagnosed as well. And the disease process, it is considered a disease, and few have temporary remissions, but it can begin at any age. So a baby can have it, toddler, child, adolescent, teenager, emerging adult, adult, senior citizen, anyone can have this happen to them. The amount of light exposure needed to elicit an eruption really just varies from one person or one patient to another. You know, we've all used and have heard the term, when you've seen one brain injury, you've only seen one brain injury. Well, it's really the same with a polymorphous light eruption as well, because the symptoms, while there are some things that overlap amongst patients, the symptoms are very individual. And patients can tolerate a certain minimum exposure time. For some people, it's 10 or 15 minutes. Some people, it's 30 minutes. Some people, it's several hours until eruptions appear. And that light sensitivity may decrease with repeated sun exposure. And when it does decrease with repeated sun exposure, that experience or that process is called hardening. So the eruption may essentially cease to appear after days or weeks and causes that hardening to take place. Now, not that we need anything else for us gals to deal with. I mean, we've got menses and all kinds of other fun things, right? But being a female puts us at a higher risk of having this polymorphic light eruption exposure possibility. Also, having skin that sunburns easily. If you're living in northern regions, if there's a family history of the condition, even though it's not considered hereditary, having a family history does put you at a greater risk, which to me, that, without diving into the definition of all that, that sounds like it's the same thing. I mean, if you're having a family history, then doesn't that make it hereditary? But not necessarily so. But we're not talking about hereditary stuff today, so I'll skip that soapbox. But in 15% of 94 patients that were tested, at least one had an autoimmune disease origin that was recorded. And in addition to that, 8 patients had hypothyroidism or a non-toxic goiter, and the exact cause of which could not be traced. And I think it's interesting because a lot of people that have brain injury or damage to their brain and their synaptic, at the synaptic levels, and have their endocrine system shaken up and jostled around, where they didn't have, whether it was diabetes insipidus or hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism or all the other endocrine changes that can happen as a result of the injury to the brain, that now have these endocrine issues, I found it interesting that there was a decent number of patients that had these other endocrine issues that also had the polymorphous light eruption associated with their endocrine issues. And since non-toxic goiter is now considered an autoimmune disease, for those that didn't know that, and since the most probable reason for hypothyroidism is an autoimmune process, as many as 22%, so 21 patients of that 94, and 28%, or 20 of the female patients, also had some form, or may have had some form, of an associated autoimmune disorder. Let that sink in for a minute. So it really lays heavily on us to be aware and to be able to educate ourselves and advocate for ourselves and to protect our neuroendocrine system, our endocrine system, and really just care for our skin in a more assertive way. Now, when we talk about sunlight exposure, using sunscreen, even wearing clothing that can cover the arms if a person gets the breakouts on their arms, sometimes as little as 20 minutes or even 10 minutes of sun exposure is enough to trigger the problem. And even if you're wearing thin clothing, guess what? And you're sitting near a window, often it'll happen for me, like on my driving arm. So if I'm driving, even if the window's rolled up, I've got a long sleeve on, I'll still get some light itching when it's warm out, because that sun is just bearing down through the skin there, and it could just rankle me up. But for most people with polymorphic light eruption, it doesn't matter what kind of sunny day it is, even if it's overcast, after several hours, they can have a flare. Now, if further sun is avoided, the rash may settle and disappear without a trace at all within a couple of weeks. So it eventually goes away. But then when they go out and return to the sun again, one of two things happens. Either the rash gets worse, or they become acclimated to the continuous exposure to that UV, to the UV rays and that light, which does not allow the papules to return when they're re-exposed to the sunlight. And if the skin is exposed to more sunlight before the rash is cleared up, so if we don't give it time to calm down, then it'll probably get much worse and even spread beyond the normal area. So if you normally just have it on your arms and you don't allow it to calm down, you don't treat it and take care of it properly, and respect what your body's telling you, address your immune issues around it, then it can spread up into other parts of your body. And I promise you that is very uncomfortable. So you want to make sure that you're being aware of what you're doing. It doesn't matter whether you're a male or a female, man or woman. It doesn't matter whether you identify as a man or a woman. Polymorphic light eruption, although more common in women than men, can affect both. And while it particularly affects people who have light skin, it can also affect those with darker pigmented skin as well, so brown and black skin also. So it's not specific to anybody's skin color, and it can start at any age, though the usual age is between 20 and 40. And sometimes it affects children and infants, but again, that common age is 20 to 40. Now, that doesn't mean that if you're less than 20 or older than 40, you're in the safe zone, because you can still develop this if you have a major disruption to your immune system. And polymorphous light eruption is a long-standing, a slowly ameliorating disease with a tendency to develop that autoimmune or thyroid disorder And it also puts a person at risk for lupus erythematosus. And however, the risk of lupus is not increased. It just puts the risk there. Now, as far as treatment, you know, treatment that they've listed for this kind of thing, it varies, again, per individual. Some things that are recommended is, and I just want to put my little disclaimer here that I'm not a doctor or a nurse or anything like that. I don't prescribe. I'm not prescribing. I am a medical advocate, and I advocate for myself and for bringing awareness and education to others based on my own experiences and the research that Kim and I do and that, you know, we do for the betterment of our listeners if they choose to explore those avenues for themselves. So when I say treatment, these are treatments that have been recommended by various studies and not a treatment that we're prescribing. Those include supplements such as beta-carotene and nicotinamide, also known as vitamin B3. And that may be helpful in preventing some of the polymorphic light eruptions. And medically supervised phytotherapy may be prescribed by your healthcare provider to what we referred to earlier as hardening the skin if the condition persists or continues to be particularly troublesome. Now, exposure to natural sunlight in a gradual manner can also harden skin. Now, that doesn't mean it gets hard like a rock. So you got to think of harden in a different way than like what you may be thinking of hard as. However, this method is not recommended, the sun part isn't, as the risk of developing skin cancer is increased. You know, and sunbeds or tanning booths are not medically prescribed equipment and based on the American Medical Association are not safe. Now, other treatment options include, and we've heard and read a lot about those over the years, but other treatment options include medications such as topical steroid creams, oral prednisone, hydrochloroquine, azathioprine, and thalidomide. And those are all things that should be discussed with your healthcare provider. Some people are allergic to corticosteroids and can't put steroids on their skin, so then they have to look at other options. When someone takes a steroid, those topical steroids are usually intermittent, usually given by a provider in a 3 to 14 day course, so anywhere from 3 days to 2 weeks. And they can prescribe that in a mild strength all the way to a moderate strength, whatever is going to show effective for that person. Now, when you're looking at protecting your skin from the sun, during times of, you want to try and avoid the sun during maximum times of intensity. And that's right there between 11 and 3. And I got to tell you, that's really hard for me when I like being outside, because that's your prime time, right? Between 11 and 3. So if you are going to go out, you need to make sure that you're well protected. You're wearing a hat. You're wearing, if you get the bumps on your arms, then you want to make sure you're wearing a long sleeve or a light jacket, something to protect your skin. Not something that's going to overheat you, because you're not looking for that prickly heat experience, but something that protects your skin. Sunscreens with a maximum sun protecting factor should be used. For example, a titanium-based sunscreen. And oral steroids sometimes are prescribed in really severe cases where the itching and the sun exposure starts affecting a person's airway or breathing. And that can help reduce some of those hivy allergy of similarities more quickly. Now, desensitization with phototherapy is also another form of treatment that is prescribed sometimes. And that's where the patient is provided with repeated exposure to sunlight and or specific artificial ultraviolet light Now, they say that that hardening is safe because it's done with controlled exposure and under a dermatologist's care. And that PUVA, P-U-V-A, is an oral medicine and natural sunlight treatment that is listed as simple and effective for patients who do not improve with all the other routines that we had mentioned. And so there's a lot of options out there in treatments. And one of the least used treatment, but still something they've utilized for some individuals, is, interestingly, anti-malarial pills that have shown to be effective and could be considered for patients who are not protected by sunscreens and do not respond to UVB or UVA phototherapy. So all of that, it's a lot of talking, a lot of technical conversation, but something to be aware of. And when you're talking about having photosensitivity, when you're talking about having light sensitivity after a concussion or brain injury, when you're talking about endocrine changes within the body, and as time goes on, you'll hear Kim and I talk about the gut and brain connection and more about inflammation and how those things all tie together. The symptoms that people experience regarding the polymorphous light eruptions, it's worth paying attention to. And you may have been experiencing it and didn't even know there was a name for it. And hopefully, now you do.
Yes,
so, Kim,
that is,
what do you think?
Very informative. Well, it's very informative. I just got a couple questions, and I'm, again, you already made the disclaimer that we're not doctors, and I'm not, they also don't sponsor us, but I will say, and whether it works or not, no red has shown up. Sometimes we think just putting clothes on, but, you know, as it gets hotter, we tend to wear lighter clothing, you know, tank tops or a looser knit kind of clothing. And I bought some things. It isn't at a store called Coolibar. It's like C-O-O-L-I-B-A-R. Land's End, which is more reasonable, they have UPF clothing that's like 50 plus UPF sunscreen protection. So there's not only the surface lotions with sunscreen in them that can be helpful, but actual clothing stores that have lines, or the whole store happens to specialize, you know, and those stores are generally for outdoor activities, you know, people who do outdoor activities, but obviously anyone can wear a t-shirt or some of these other things. And then I just wondered when you, and I'll make this brief because you didn't want to go into it, and I wonder if it doesn't apply to our topic tonight or we just didn't go there. I know that this can happen to anyone, but when you talked about heredity, you know, like Les, who was on, has red hair and very fair skin, and you know, the Finland, the Irish, the Scottish, those particular nationalities, for example, or heredity. You know, both of my parents have gotten a lot of skin cancer, and on the face, because that's what's not covered. You know, you can put sunscreen on your face, but You know, you can try to wear a hat, big sunglasses, and do what you can do to protect your face, but it's not quite the same as that V area, you know, that you really can protect with clothing and sunscreen and so forth. So, yeah, it doesn't matter where you're from or what age you're from, but it seems that certain lighter-skinned people and their genealogy or the hereditary part might be, everyone should be aware and listen to everything you just said because it's so important for everyone. But there's probably some groups and those who already have autoimmune, since this can be tied to autoimmune conditions, I would think those people would want to be maybe even more, a little more mindful because they perhaps have a genetic predisposition, or do you think that doesn't apply to this particular manifestation of the sun?
You know, that's a great question. I certainly cannot answer that from a scientific perspective because I'm not a scientist. From a lay individual, it makes common sense to me that they correlate with each other. But,
yeah,
sure. You know, common sense isn't necessarily scientific proof. Just because I hypothesize that something makes sense or it makes sense that there's a correlation doesn't necessarily make it so. You know, I always heard growing up that because I had red highlights or I had some what they call ginger qualities, that I would burn easier in the sun or, you know, I'd have to be more cautious in the sun. But that was just passed down through the generations, you know, and that little things like that. So to me, that means it's hereditary. But again, I'm not a, you know, and I love to study hereditary stuff just because you and I both enjoy studying genealogy. And so being able to look into genetics and bloodlines and being able to look into labs and genetic markers and things like that, that kind of stuff really interests me. But to be able to answer your question with factual certainty, I am not able to do that. What I can say, though, is that regarding the sensitivity, I still have sensitivity with my eyes. It's not as bad as right after the brain injury. It's gotten better over the years, but I still have times when it's really rough and difficult. And ways that people can help themselves if they want to address light sensitivity, even if they don't have the polymorphic disruption, if they just have the light sensitivity, wearing sunglasses outdoors, you know, to protect your eyes from the UV rays is helpful. Wearing a hat indoors to block overhead lights if it's needed. Change your phone settings to night mode. You know, wear a blue blocker lens at night only. And those sunglasses that can be made with blue blocker built into the lens to help out with that, blocking out those the brightness of your environment. Now, there are several types of glasses that, of course, range in various prices, and I'm not going to get into all that, but that they have blue blocker lenses for nighttime wear, and you can find those glasses at, I'm aware of three to four different places. Now, these places aren't sponsoring me, and I'm not getting paid to mention them. I just am familiar with them just through my studies and community involvement.
Me too.
But one is called TheraSpecs. It's TheraSpecs. And they market migraine relief glasses with different light filtering lenses. And they come with a variety of styles with indoor, outdoor, and also prescription lenses available. Then there's EyeBuyDirect, so E-Y-E, separate word, buy, like you're going to buy something, and then direct. And they offer options for digital screen protection glasses that filter out blue light. They can be made with or without a prescription, and they can you can even choose not to have them tinted unless you're viewing a screen, like when a slight purple or blue tint will appear, and different ways that can make it easy on your eyes, almost like your eyes are sighing, like, oh, that's so much better. And then, of course, you can go the other route to search for light sensitivity glasses through, like, Target, Amazon, whatever your online search engines are, and be able to search for different websites for a variety of those light filtering glasses. But dimming your lights on your screens, gradually increasing brightness over time, for like on my phone, for example, I have it set for nighttime mode to start at a certain time in the evening, and it makes my screen go into that blue light mode. And then a certain time in the morning, that blue light mode comes off and goes into daytime mode. So it's not as harsh on my eyes in the evening time. But that's my own personal interest. And I think it's great that, at least for Android, I'm not an Apple person. I don't have any Apple products, so I can't speak to Apple products. But at least for Android, they allow those options within their phone settings choices, which is really nice. And progressively increasing screen time, try using over-the-counter eye drops for dry eyes. And, you know, there's if you need help addressing light sensitivity or any other concussion symptoms, then you can certainly contact the Brain Injury Association in your state. They'll have resources specific to your state or to your country. And there's also a place called Sheltering Arms that are concussion experts that can help with streamlining some information. It's called Sheltering Arms Institute, and they're a collaboration with VCU Health, and they help people with light sensitivity after a concussion as well. So, I mean, and that's just a few resources. There are literally hundreds, probably even thousands of resources out there, but those are the main ones. And the other thing as far as therapy goes is find yourself. What helped me the most was finding myself a neuro-optometric or rehabilitation optometrist. So a neuro-optometrist. And those eye care professionals are really highly trained in diagnosing, treating, and providing rehabilitation of a wide variety of neurological conditions that affect the visual system, as well as perceptual and motor disorders. So it's not just for your visual field, it's for other things as well. So whether you're rehabilitating from a concussion, a stroke, or dealing with other neurological deficits, then an optometrist, in addition to a neuro-optometrist, you'll want to have as part of your care team. Maybe also include physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists, et cetera, et cetera.
I just want to say I really appreciate that. We got to wind it down. We've only got 10 minutes. But for those of you who caught all those or didn't catch but caught all those great resources, it's in the last 10 minutes of the show. So if you click on the link again, there is a timer slider at the bottom that you can drag over with your cursor. If you don't want to hear the whole show again, to write down some of those great resources. And I really appreciate, you know, a couple times it's come up, whether it's been about the mind and we've talked about a neuropsychologist or in this case a neuro-optometrist. I can honestly say that none of my practitioners have ever recommended a specialist in that way with neuro in front. and the regular ophthalmologist and the regular psychologist have not done me a lot of good and don't have a great understanding of what I deal with from day to day. So even though we're not doctors, I think bringing up resources like that, there's a lot of people I wasn't aware that they made those specialties before, because my regular practitioners either aren't aware, they didn't get it, we don't have them, or I don't know the reason, but I never even heard it mentioned until I heard it mentioned from guests here on the show who have the same kind of issues and know about these kind of specialties. So I appreciate you mentioning that.
And
I have an Apple phone.
Go ahead. You have an Apple phone?
I'll have to look at the settings. That's all I was going to say. I don't know. It's a really old model, and I'm not very tech savvy, but I will say that a year ago when I was getting botched cataract surgery, and he's supposed to be the best surgeon in town for that, and I mentioned my brain injury prior to going in, and I got metal in my head. I wanted to make sure that these lasers that they were going to be using in my eyes weren't going to be damaging to something in my brain. And I can't say in retrospect that I feel in full confidence that he was really sure about the, one thing doesn't have anything to do with the other. In retrospect with what I've dealt with the last year and I'm still dealing with, and I haven't been back there, I'd probably stop by a lawyer first, but in any case, I think it's really helpful, and then I won't say any more on the topic, just to know that you can finish whatever you were going to say, and then we need to close. But I think it's very helpful to know those types of specialists exist, and it can save you a lot of time, money, running around, and maybe bad information. Nothing's guaranteed, but at least if someone is actually working in this field, they're likely to know a little more than the vanilla variety.
Well, and that's like
so
optometrists are kind of like that vanilla variety you're referring to. And neuro-optometrists, they are doctors of optometry, but they have additional training to diagnose and treat neurological conditions that negatively affect the visual system, where an optometrist does the general annual or yearly eye exam. They don't treat neurological conditions. And when we're talking about visual deficits caused by physical disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, or other neurological issues, that's when you want to see a neuro-ophthalmologist. You know, patients who have any loss of visual acuity, visual field or color vision, imbalance, you know, as a result of vision or head injury, they want to see a neuro-ophthalmologist, not just an ophthalmologist. They want someone with more training. And they want someone that's had training to deal with the brain or optic nerves that associated with vision. That's the difference between an ophthalmologist and a neuro-ophthalmologist.
Right, and this guy I went to was not an optometrist. He was an ophthalmologist and a surgeon. He specialized in surgery. He was doing cataract surgery, replacing the lens of your eye, but claimed that just affected, you know, the surface of the back of your eye. But if you could see all the laser treatments I had, you don't know that those were, I doubt those were stopping as they hit my eyeball, or that he could say they were.
Right? No, yeah, absolutely. You really went through it with that experience. But the difference, there's a lot of words here there's a lot of words here that are similar. You know, optometrists, ophthalmologists, opticians, neuro-ophthalmologists, and to someone who didn't know what the difference was, they all mean the same thing, but they're really different. Opticians are technicians who fit you for eyeglasses, contact lenses, and really any other vision-correcting devices. An optometrist examines, diagnoses, and treats patients' eyes. A ophthalmologist, those are doctors who perform medical and surgical treatments for eye conditions, so like diabetic retinopathy or things like that.
Right.
A neuro-ophthalmologist are optometrists, so they're doctors. Neuro-ophthalmologists are ophthalmologists or eye doctors, but with more training. I personally wanted someone with more training, which is why I opted for a neuro-ophthalmologist.
And now I know they exist. All right, Karen, thank you so much for all of the valuable information you've imparted on us tonight. I think that's a great topic, a great way to kick off spring, and in honor of the solar eclipse yesterday, which you look at for even a second, and it can burn your retina. So it'd be interesting to see the statistics of the people who did that, who got the glasses but wanted to just take them off for a second to get a peek, because super duper dangerous. It's dangerous to just look in the sun, but when it's eclipsing, it can fry your retina. So anyway, with, like I said, in honor of the eclipse yesterday, we decided, and the advent of spring, as we tore the page off our calendar, decided to do this topic tonight. And thanks so much for contributing and being here. We always appreciate all of the great information you have, Karen. And since it is spring, I'm going to close with Leah West. You can find her at leahwest.com. I know it's a favorite a lot of you guys have. My first indie artist, and did the trailers on my book. But this song, I have to put away half the year. It's called What Else? Spring. Good night and God bless, everyone. I will see you next week, where I believe Les Paul is going to come back and be my guest, and it'll be great to hear what he's been up to, when we might expect him back, and just to have a couple of us old-timers together playing and screwing around a little bit next week. Thanks, Karen. Good night, everyone.